Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Probably won't be as long as his career because that's just how it goes for promising A's players. But what, that's two walk-offs in one series. You can't put him on the list of guys who have ruined Astros fans' nights. Like, you can't put him where Howie Kendrick is or Albert Pujols or even Randy Arozarena. But strictly as a regular season player, our first impressions of Nick Kurtz are like, all right, this guy's going to be a problem for years to come.
Adolis Garcia before 2023, where it's just like, yep. And then Adolis Garcia went to another level in the playoffs. So yes. Like, oh, God, this guy.
Yeah, so I don't want to throw Nick Kurtz into that realm because those guys are
postseason killers.
Are ending seasons.
Yeah, they're in their own.
Yeah, they're in their own tier of hall of Astro hecklers.
Long way to go, Kurtz.
Yeah.
Probably have to get traded.
Yeah, probably won't be doing it for the A's, no matter where they're located. But as far as regular season,
he's up there.
He's right there. Like, Pujols was a regular season guy too, but we know him the playoffs and all the things. But
cross sport comparison, Peyton Manning.
Yeah, we never had to deal with him in the playoffs. T.Y.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he's T.Y. Like, because Peyton Manning's one of the greats of all time too. I find receiver. He just made his career beating up on the Texans. I don't know where Nick Kurtz will be as far as a MLB player. I just know
seems good to me.
I just know. I remember that. I'm going to remember that name mostly because I have to enunciate. Also, when it comes to that name. Also, I recognize him as a guy who hits game-winning home runs against the Astros. He ruins haters' perfect season. He got Abreu in game one. Yeah. So he's not just hitting game-winning home runs. He's doing it against your best.
Yeah.
Which, enough of Nick Kurtz. I don't want to see him anymore. Like, I need the A's to trade him, like, immediately. Like, cash in on him right now. I think he's a first-year player. I don't know if he came up last year.
I think he's a rookie. He might have come up. No, yeah. I think this is his first actual
year. He's one of those. He's like one of the Cam Smiths of the world. Like Cam. Now, he spent a year in 2024 in the minors, so he's not as quick as Cam Smith to get up here and be a real contributor on the league level. But
our rookie is a real rookie.
Yeah, he didn't have any time served in 2024, but Nick Kurtz is the reason the Astros don't win the series against the A's in Sacramento. If a lot of you missed it, I understand. Another late game. The whole series was full of those type of games. You'll get an earlier start against the Angels today. It'll be right around 8:35 or so. But there it is. Remember the name or don't. But I will always remember the name Nick Kurtz for what he did over the last week or so. It's unfortunate. You had a real shot to take 3 out of 4. You're down. Caratini hits a 3-run bomb, and you're thinking, okay, feels good. Let's get to extras and find a way. Unfortunately, look, Hader had to have one of these, right? I mean, going perfect would have been cool, but having that as an expectation is probably a little much. And Nick Kurtz said, you know what? It ends today, or it ends in the night of Sacramento, where all those longtime A's fans can enjoy the guy they're going to be able, like all the kids in Sacramento who are going to go out and get their Nick Kurtz jerseys. You know, those jerseys that don't have Sacramento on them. There's a patch that says Vegas on them because the A's won't acknowledge that Sacramento really exists. When you guys go out there and get your Nick Kurtz jerseys, just realize you got them for a short time. Not a long time. And even a shorter time than regular A's fans know about their prospects. because in this case, you may have them for 2 years in that city. Or considering how long it's taken to even break ground, it may be longer than that. I don't want to give the A's much credit as far as their planning for their new stadium. This thing could go on for a while now because they still have not
started. I think they said 28.
So maybe they'll have Nick Kurtz for the next three seasons or so.
Will
Nick Kurtz make it to Vegas?
I was going to say, will he be a Vegas A?
So the thing in Miami right now is with Messi. Will Messi play a game in their new building? He was brought there to elevate that franchise, but they play in like this renovated stadium in Fort Lauderdale. The question is, will Messi and Inter Miami enter their new stadium together? Will Nick Kurtz ever take a plate appearance as an A?
Yeah.
In Vegas? That's the question right now.
I think he will, but it might be that's the last year, right? If I'm counting it right, that'd be his fourth year in the league. Probably could trade him after that. 2 years of control, you get a lot. But, yeah, I mean, this guy, like you said, you have to be careful when you say his name. And he is someone who has absolutely, in four games, really two games, made his mark on my psyche. When I look at, you know, the next time the A's are on the schedule, I'm like, oh, watch out for Kurtz.
Yeah. Look, we have Denzel Clark who will rob you when he's out of home runs. Let me clear that up. When he's out on the field, Denzel Clark is a home run robber. He's a home run robber. That's what he does. They have like these very Jacob Wilson. You've got who's the other guy? Now I'm blanking on the guy in right field who couldn't make the play.
Oh, Caratini.
Lawrence Butler as well. So you look at that roster and go, promising young players. They're just the A's, so whenever they reach their full potential, they'll likely be someplace else.
Yeah, and they won't build around them in the meantime.
Yeah, and they won't. Yeah, they won't. They won't supplement these young guys with real players who can maybe help them make a run. But at least for last night, the A's got the Astros, so you split that series.
They're a feisty team.
Yeah, I mean, they got enough guys who aren't so downtrodden by being an A.
Yeah,
that they're like, you know what? I enjoy being a major leaguer. This A stuff is fine. I like the classic uniforms. I kind of look good in green and yellow. Let's go. Yeah.
Always dreamed of the green and yellow Kurtz on the back.
I don't know what Nick Kurtz was dreaming of, but he is a major leaguer, and the Astros felt that over the last 4 days. God, two walk-offs. Got to be from one guy.
The same guy.
The same guy in the same series.
It didn't even cross my mind that, honestly, that anyone would walk off Josh Hader, if they do, would be kind of small ball-ish, Manfred man kind of way of, you know, you move the runner over on a ground ball, then a sec fly or something like that. It never occurred to me that it's like, oh, someone could just hit a bomb. And it's the guy who hit a bomb off Abreu 3 days ago. It's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me until he actually did. And then when Myers turned around just like, this guy did it again. Oh my God.
It's partly because he is a young player who we don't have real name recognition for. So you're not thinking to yourself, oh, he did do that. Oh, he's coming up in this spot. You're not thinking that. It's because it's not the names I mentioned. Kendrick aside, no one's thinking of Howard Kendrick before he did what he did. But, you know, we know
Pujols comes up.
Garcia has done things. Randy Arozarena is an established major leaguer. You could be fearful because of the past, but you wouldn't have remembered that Nick Kurtz hit the walk-off in the game one of that series because it's just Nick Kurtz. Now it's, oh, damn, it's Nick Kurtz up there.
Yeah.
So there it is. You have a disappointing end to a series. It almost felt like you dominated in some ways because of the run scored.
On aggregate, they dominated.
Yeah, in the middle games, there was domination there, but it turns out no matter how you win them, Sean, as they tell you, whether you win them by one or you win them by 10 when it comes to baseball, a win is a win, and the A's took two. And that's how I phrase it. The A's took two from the Astros because as a big soccer head, because we had a soccer conversation earlier, the Astros dropped points to the A's.
Yeah, and the A's got a result.
Yeah, the A's got a result. In this series, the Astros dropped points. The A's got a result, and so did USMNT. Not a very aesthetically pleasing one, but they did beat Saudi Arabia 1-0 to qualify for the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup. So all that talk about what's wrong with U.S. soccer?
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong with U.S. soccer.
Pochettino is just like, this guy's bitching about friendlies.
Yeah, look, when games count, look at how my team performs. I mean, sure, it's against Saudi Arabia and Trinidad and Tobago, but you'll take them. No context. We're not looking
for
context.
We don't decide who we play.
I would imagine the U.S. Soccer Federation may. No, I don't know. Actually, I don't know how much say they have in the Gold Cup.
Or CONCACAF or whoever runs this.
I think it's CONCACAF.
Wait, but Saudi's in it.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, Qatar has been in the most recent past. Like, teams outside of North America, Central America have been in it, but they're expanding the field.
Sure, whatever.
It's like
that's all on the up and up.
It's like when the U.S. winds up in Copa America. Why is the U.S. playing in the Copa America?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's happening.
At least it's like on the same side of the earth, though.
That's true. Why are the Saudis playing? Do you think the Saudis bought their way in?
No. What? International Soccer Federations? Bribes?
I'm not alleging anything. Del? I'm sure there's a reasonable reason why the Saudis are playing in this tournament.
Love the game.
I can't speak to it because I'm not going to do the research.
Yep.
I mean, is this show here for reckless speculation? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But Sean is taking that role for this particular topic. I will stay away because I don't know. Mostly because I don't want the Saudis after me. That's all.
They probably still are pretty close, huh? That game was in Austin.
If what you're saying has any basis in reality.
I didn't say anything. I said international soccer would never accept bribes.
Yeah, you said it in a tone.
They would never do it.
But you said it in a tone with that lift in your voice that suggests you believe the never is actually, they would always do it if they could. The Saudi Soccer Federation, I believe you were just invited because it was a joy to have you around. And you got one more game because you're not qualifying for the quarterfinals as the U.S. takes one of those spots.
Hold that L.
I wouldn't say it so confidently, considering how that game went. But
can you tell I didn't want?
Yeah. Either way, thanks to Chris Richards for scoring, the Crystal Palace defender for scoring a goal to put the U.S. into the quarterfinals. We'll go to break with that. Certainly, we'll get into the finals. If you want to get in on anything, you can 713-780-3776. It is Friday, so normally, for people who listen quite a bit on Friday, you know it's Michael Carroll's time at 11:30. He joined us earlier in the week because he had stuff to do. He's out, so we don't have him. But if you have questions about TV, you know we take those as well. We've got NBA Finals to talk about. I got a question for Sean. Can someone be too tall for an activity, considering what happened to a former Laker great? If you missed that story. Sometimes maybe you're just too tall to do things. I don't know if it contributed to an accident. But maybe leave the motorcycles to people under 7 feet tall. I don't know. Just saying. We'll get to that and more when we come back. But first, I want to tell you about Monument Chevrolets. It's a place you go to where you can be 7 feet tall or shorter and get a great car. Doesn't matter. They're going to get a car that fits what you want. So you check out all they have to offer on monumentchevrolet.com. And once you see the perfect car for you, you can head on out there to Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. So whether you want a Blazer or Silverado or something like an EV, it's there for you. Perfect car for you. And once you get out on the lot and see what you want, you're going to meet the great salespeople there, and they're going to walk you through the car buying process. Whether you know all you need to know or you're just starting, you've never bought a car before, it does not matter. They will make sure you get the right car. And part of why they've been in business for over 50 years now is because they treat you like family. When you walk out on that lot and you meet the people, they're going to treat you like you're one of their own. And what that means is you get great service, you get friendly service, and they make sure anything you want, you get. So check them out at monumentchevrolet.com. That's the website. And, of course, they're out in Pasadena. And you should remember this, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. If you want to call in, you're welcome. 713-780-3776. The guys are out and about. We'll tell you where they are a little bit later as they continue their summer circuit. Of course, part of that summer circuit is you show up at the event, you get to register for a great prize. So we'll tell you more about that in a bit. So we talked about this, Sean. It was partly brought on by a caller on the morning show who asked, is there any way Jalen Williams could win finals MVP? And we said, that's unlikely because of how well Shea had played, even though we were coming off a 40-piece from Jalen Williams. Well, Shea left it open for Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams could not step through that door. So the scenario we laid out would be it had to go seven because one Shea underperforming game wasn't going to be enough, and Jalen Williams would have to be great for two games, and Shea would have to underperform with the Thunder winning in game seven. We're going to get a game seven. Shea did not play well, turned the ball over eight times, but the Pacers' defense, which was not one of the storylines coming into the series, is really mostly about, well, the Thunder being the overwhelming favorite and how their defense could suffocate and were the Pacers going to be able to operate how they normally do offensively. And while, 64 points for the Pacers at the half isn't a big number for them, like, sure, 64 points is a lot, but they have put up bigger numbers than that just because of their pace of play and how they do things. When you hold the Thunder under 45 points and you have a 20-point-plus lead thanks to Ben Shepherd's buzzer-beating three at the half, I think the story flips to how the Pacers were able to shut down an OKC offense. And, OKC right now in this series, they're not – like the numbers tell you, they're not really passing the ball. We see Shea go to work. It's a lot of ISO stuff, and the Pacers known certainly for their ball movement. Just two conflicting styles offensively, and right now the defense is, particularly the Pacers, is the one, at least last night, that won that battle. So we get a game seven, and Tyrese Haliburton played. He didn't start off great. I think I saw at one point, just checking a box score, he might have been like 0-for-5 or something. Maybe I got that. Maybe I'm thinking about early in game five. I don't remember exactly, but I know he didn't start off well last night, and he got it going. But thanks to TJ McConnell, who has been, I don't know if he was ever called an X factor before the series started. I'm not sure he rose to that level, but over the course of these last couple games, really throughout the series, he has been one of those dudes who is outperforming expectations, and it's one of the reasons the Pacers have forced a game seven. So in a strange way, despite the fact that the Thunder were overwhelming favorites, I think a game seven win actually would validate or make their championship seem like more earned than anything else. Because if they just roll through beating the Wolves in five and then they smack the Pacers around in five, the NBA, the narratives would start about soft-ass final couple teams. You didn't earn anything. Oh, then of course Haliburton got hurt later in the series, but if that had happened early, that adds another level of disdain for how they won it, because that's just how the narratives go. But with the Pacers doing what they've done and getting this to a game seven, anytime you want to get game seven to win a title, I think it kind of validates the journey.
It adds a little bit to it because there's no more clutch moment. There's no more theoretically that's where they pulled together and showed their championship DNA. Whoever wins this is going to have championship DNA. All the guys on this team, whether it's Pascal Siakam, Tyrese Haliburton, or Obi Toppin, if they win, it's like, oh, for the rest of their careers, this guy's seen it all. He's been through the wars, because NBA Finals Game 7, there's nothing more top of the mountain than that. Even if I don't know if this is exactly like the last Finals Game 7 as in terms of the heights of basketball that we're watching, the last one being the 2016 Cavs-Warriors series. Like, I don't think we're either of these teams are at that level, but just the actual, you know, grind of what you have to go through. I think for all the players, it gives them a little extra legacy points. Shout out to Kevin Durant. But I think for it, like the Thunder winning the series, I don't know if they go down as like 68 wins and they are one of the greatest teams of all time. It's like, oh, there's a lot of times in the series where they kind of looked like the worst team, to be honest. Like this looks
true.
Like two evenly matched teams, and you wouldn't say that when there's an 18-win difference between them.
Yeah, the Thunder at one point were one of those teams who could have won 80 games combined in the regular postseason and lose less than 20 overall. That's not happening now. So we were talking about a team where the numbers would tell you they were one of the all-time greats. This series shows that they're good, certainly. You make the finals. You're a good basketball team. But
very good.
But no matter what happens, that dominant thought that we had about how good could they be, that was the question. How good is this team? Are we on the verge of a dynasty?
Are we watching the
dynastic run?
2015 Warriors, like the first Warriors run? Are we watching that?
Yeah.
And it's like, not exactly. Because even that Warriors team, like they went down 2-1 against the Cavs. And
injuries took the Cavs' real chance of winning that series
and then
away.
They won the next three games.
Yeah, so
it's a little different.
Winning a title is hard. I think we should all just acknowledge that that's the baseline.
I don't want to admit that because it helps me slander people after they win. So
no, you can.
When I call them a loser and then they win a championship, I can still be right.
You can, can pick apart their win and say, hey, Celtics, you had a run where everyone you played, their best player was either unavailable going into the series or got hurt in the series. You can do that for the Celtics title. But when it comes down to it, winning a championship is hard. So no matter how the Thunder or Pacers do it, I don't need to say we need to applaud them because I ain't going to applaud you. But you can acknowledge that what they did was an accomplishment without really saying, well.
Yeah.
You didn't do it in the fashion that I like, unless you don't like the Celtics, and I understand. Understand. Like, injuries, I will acknowledge you can pick apart someone's title if all the best players for the other teams got hurt. But there's no such run like this. I get it. Steph wasn't available to play the Wolves, but they didn't play an injured Warriors team. They played the Wolves and beat them. And, yes, Tyrese Halliburton's hobbled, but he came back and got his game going later in Game 6 and seemed just fine afterwards. Of course, he'll have to manage. He only played 23 minutes or so, which is great for him. Didn't have to extend himself, and he should be okay for Game 7. So injuries pop up, understood. But, hey, we got a Game 7 in a finals that I don't think anyone expected to go this long. And you want to credit the Pacers, certainly, for making it a series. And we'll see if this young Thunder team can find a way, because you would say that was probably their worst performance of the postseason. And the questions about whether the lights were too bright or were they tentative because they knew they had a championship to win, they have shown the ability to bounce back from a Game 6 loss. They had a chance to close out the Nuggets on the road, didn't do it, then came home and won that series. By the way, another way if you want to slander their title, Aaron Gordon got hurt. So there are always ways if you want to, but I will refrain from that just because for now, until one of those Thunder players pisses me off, and then I'll change my tune about everything. Right. But for right now, it's just, hey, good finals. We got a Game 7. We had probably one non-competitive game. That was last night's game. And maybe Game 2, you want to put it there too. But right now, on Sunday, we'll see. Can the Indiana Pacers, led by Tyrese Halliburton and Pascal Siakam, win a title? Is this one more improbable than the Carlisle team when he beat the big three? Because they did have a great MVP level player in Dirk, who was on an all time run, but the rest of the team was kind of a bunch of vagabonds. Tyson Chandler, Jason Kidd's on that team.
It was a very Barea's role player
team.
Heavy.
Yeah, yeah. You had Devin Harris might have still been on that team at the time, or was he gone at that point?
I think he was on the first one. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember him being on that first one. I don't know if he was still there. So which one do you think, if Rick Carlisle gets it done, is more improbable?
I kind of think this one, just because the 11 one, like you said, you had a no doubt about it, Hall of Famer. Like, at the time, he was viewed as a Hall of Famer. Going on a legendary run where he – also, they're smoking everybody. Like, they basically ended the last Kobe Lakers competitive run.
Sure.
And Andrew Bynum clotheslining J.J. Barea.
I remember that.
Did they beat the Thunder in that one? I think they beat the Trailblazers. Or maybe they beat the Spurs. I forgot who
I think they're – I can't
– They had a crazy pass.
So, Dirk – it was late in a game. I think they beat the Spurs. Manu fouled him up three, and he got the and one. I remember Dirk was driving the lane, got the dunk, and Manu fouled him and led to an and one. I think to tie the game, and of course, the Spurs, obviously the Mavericks go on to win the series.
I think the 11-1 is I think it's more probable.
Even though he's going against the big three.
Yeah, because that first Miami team, like, We're saying that the Mavericks are full of vagabonds.
Mike Bibby.
They're starting.
Carlos Arroyo and others. And
I mean, it was the big three. It was Dexter Pittman. That's it, really.
Udonis Haslam was on the team.
No, didn't he get hurt that year?
No, I remember him trying to guard. I remember they switched for Udonis to guard Dirk. Because remember in game two of that series, the comeback, Dirk isolated Bosch and went to the basket for the game winner. And then they put Udonis on him for the next game, UD on him for the next game, and he got a stop. And that was the last game that the Heat won in that series.
Also, LeBron was playing like absolute ass.
Yes,
like
he was
playing like terribly.
He was awful in that
series. Because before last night, we were talking about it yesterday. His bad game was 24 points on good efficiency.
On 45% shooting.
Yeah. Like I guess other than Chet Holmgren, but Chet Holmgren, you not coming through in the finals is a little different than LeBron in 2011 not coming through in the finals.
Yeah, there's some numbers for Chet and Miles Turner that aren't flattering as far as centers and shooting percentages.
No, but I would still say that Miles Turner is dominating Chet Holmgren.
Certainly defensively. He's getting after Chet.
And Miles Turner is just like missing threes, missing pretty good looks on jump shots, where Holmgren is trying to take it to the basket against Turner, and I'm not sure if it's gone well once. I honestly don't know, especially maybe the last like three games. I don't know if he scored on Miles Turner in like a driving scenario.
Yeah, we do our scapegoat rankings. We've done that throughout the playoffs.
Chet Holmgren. 1-1.
He's at the top of the list right now. Miles Turner, if not for the defensive performances, he'd be there too. He's like shooting under 36% from the floor.
He has been bad on offense.
Yeah, Chet has been worse. Chet is as far as big men, centers in particular. Yeah. Chet has the worst shooting percentage since modern day basketball as far as centers in the finals. That's how bad he's been.
God, and think about some of the centers we're talking about. Old-ass Big Z and Dexter Pittman.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of finals teams that, like, had absolute luggage at center, and even those guys. I mean, who's the – oh, I guess it was Tyson Chandler who was good. I was thinking of the other the 06 Mavericks team with Eric Dampier starting at center. Like,
speaking of guys who were vagabonds on those Heat rosters.
Early Heatles, yeah.
Eric Dampier, I believe, was on one of those teams. I'll find it. Yeah, here it is. Chet Holmgren. Since the merger, these are the lowest field goal percentage by a center in an NBA Finals. Minimum 50 attempts.
Oh, okay. Okay. That helps cut out the Dampiers of the world.
Chet Holmgren, 35.3%.
Even that's tough. Because most centers that have bad finals, it's A, because they can't guard. It's not really because of what they do on offense. And two, they are very limited offensive players, so all they take are short shots, where Chet is actually – he's going – what did he shoot last night? 0 for 3 from 3, 2 of 9 from the field. And the reason I think Turner is eating his lunch in this series is because Turner is shutting down Holmgren, whereas on the other side of the court, it feels like Turner is getting good looks and missing them. And he's missed them all series. But it's less – to me, it's less Holmgren is forcing a bad Turner series, where I think Turner is forcing a bad Holmgren series.
I would agree. And by the way, Patrick Ewing makes the list. Hakeem had him.
I was going to say. I think he shut down Ewing, but I forgot if I was conflating that with something.
No, 94, 36% from the field. That's bad. And then Miles Turner is third, 36.8. So the two centers in this series have been bad offensively. Turner's done a great job defensively. And Chet Holmgren's biggest moments is when he shut down the Pacers when they tried to continually get him on the switch in game four.
The small guards.
Yeah, he got after them and made plays. So
his second biggest one, though, was Nesmith putting his nuts on his back.
That's not really a great moment for Chet. No,
that's the memorable moment.
Yes, Nesmith. Put him in the. I was going to say Nesmith put him in a basket, but you have a very descriptive way of describing it as well. All right, so we'll go to break with that. Game seven on Sunday, so we'll be able to talk about it on Monday and see who is a champion. The odds say the Thunder. I think they're like 8.5-point favorites, but we've seen throughout the series that's rarely mattered.
I'm going to pick the Thunder, but closer than the experts think.
Honoring Lee Corso, even during basketball season. Yes. Respect to you.
Eight and a half is too much.
But it makes sense. As an ex-Florida State coach, you would honor Lee Corso. As a
More interceptions than Deion Sanders as a Noel.
Sunshine Scooter.
Yeah.
Him and Burt Reynolds, guys you would never think to have played at Florida State considering the modern history of Florida State, but they're probably their two most famous people. Before like the 90s or I mean, I guess the mid 80s or so.
Yeah, I was going to say it's those two guys and Deion Sanders, probably just the most famous FSU alum.
Mean, sure, Derek Brooks, great player. Chris Winkie, Charlie Ward, Peter Wark. But as far as fame, you got to movies and TV trump college football players. I'm sure
Winston number four.
Probably though. Always will. Well, you think he's the fourth most recognizable Florida State player of all time?
I can't think of someone higher than him.
You know what? He's
Danny Cannell.
He's on TV quite a bit. Heisman winner, not Danny Cannell. Winston Heisman winner, number one overall pick.
Yeah, relatively recent.
You're probably right.
Long NFL career.
He probably falls right behind, maybe not right behind, but he's behind Deion, the Sunshine Scooter, and Burt Reynolds. Jameis is probably there. What a Mount Rushmore. All right, we'll go to break with that. If you want to call in, you can. You know that number, 713-780-3776. When we get back, I'll tell you where the guy's going to be this afternoon. And also some news about how you can listen to us. We'll get to that when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So, Joe George is filling in for Paul Gallant. He'll be out at the aquarium. And so will Sean. Sean's going to be out there with Joe doing a show from 12 to 3. You should go out there and join him. Meet the guys. See the promo team. And why do I mention the promo team? Because you got a chance to win a great prize. We've been talking about those e-bikes all summer. Well, not all summer. In fact, officially, summer doesn't begin till like today, right, or tomorrow? What?
I think it's the 21st.
Yeah, so tomorrow, but generally,
yes,
the summer has begun, and
it's Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Yes.
I don't care what science
you don't care
says.
About what. Okay, fine, we can go with that. But we give away those. We're going to give away those e-bikes, and how do you win? You got to show up at one of our summer circuit events and sign up. Now, you can sign up more than once. Per event.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go.
So like raffle style.
Yeah, you can go to the aquarium today and sign up. And then, you can sign up once per event. I shouldn't say, but you can sign up more than once. You can go, if you're at East River 9, you could have signed up there with us. You can sign up today at the aquarium. And then, of course, the next time we're out, you can sign up then. Those Power On e-bikes have a value of about $4,000. You're going to get a pair of them because we don't want you riding alone.
Yeah.
We want you riding with your buddy or your girl or your guy, whoever that might be.
All right. Hopefully I win.
You can't win.
Oh. But the morning show always talk about.
Well, the morning show has always and will always be full of it. They can't win anything either. They never can. They get enough free stuff and food. So no e-bikes for them. That's for the listeners.
Okay.
And they have their opportunity to do that when they come out and meet you and Joe. And then the Killer Bees out at the Houston
Aquarium. Come see some White Tigers.
Is that the nickname for your show?
No, the White
Tigers. I'm aware. I thought you guys were calling yourselves the White Tigers because just have a name for yourself.
The White Tigers and also some big cats.
We got the Killer Bees, the White Tigers, and some big cats, some actual cats there. So go out there and have a good time with the guys and try to win something. Doesn't take much. Just got to be there and to sign up. Okay, we got a couple callers here before we get into our second hour. Let's start with Willie P. Let's talk some USMNT. What's up, Willie P.?
Hey, good morning again, Dell. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Not bad. So I just want to address two things. One, earlier I said that they switched to a 3-5-3, which after hearing it back on the radio, that's 12 people on the field. So it was actually a 3-5-2 that had messed up Spain's, you know, golden age of dominance before they switched back to the 4-3. But I want to address something that Lance kept saying. He said yesterday, he said again today after I got the phone earlier. He keeps saying, why are the women so good? And the reason why the women are so good is because, one, they won that World Cup in 99, but they had good showings before that. And the other countries, they didn't have academies, women's professional teams like they do now. Like La Liga women, that just started, I mean, I don't know how long ago. And same with, like, over in France, the Eredivisie over in Holland, like, Once the women won in 99, they were always going to be a step above the men, because you had little girls out here, like, little girls aren't going to play football. They're not really going to play basketball, you know. They can't play professional volleyball or softball. So soccer wasn't as big thing. Everybody wanted to grow up to be Abby Wambach, Alex Morgan, you know, Julie Foudy, and so on, Mia Hamm. And so now, and he keeps saying, well, yeah, the other countries, like you said, the other countries are catching up with the women, but that's because they have professional leagues. But if you notice, unlike the MLS, the WSL here in the United States is a better league. The women from Spain and Europe and South America, they come and play over in America, and they're some of the best. That's not the case with the MLS, so that's why the women's team will always be a step above the men's team. But anyways, I just want to get your opinion on that. You guys have a great weekend. Sean A. Mace, what do you do, baby? Peace, fellas.
So we talked about that on the morning show. Why are the – and he laid it out. Why are the women in this country as far as our national team at a level where they're competing for the biggest tournaments in the sport, whether it be the Olympics, where the senior teams can play, and also the World Cup? So, yeah, they have a bit of an advantage because of how they started compared to some of the women around the world. We hear conversations during the World Cup, Women's World Cup, about how it's big. Even in England, who has been a rival of the U.S., played them in a knockout round match, not in this past World Cup, I believe, but in the one before, that they were behind. They didn't have the support. And so when the women's Arsenal team plays in the Emirates, it's a big deal when they have a full crowd and they see that there is support there. So there have been differences in the level of development. But when I watch the sides play, whether it be the U.S. versus Sweden or the Netherlands or England in the women's game, like, our players, maybe the ones who idolize Wambach and Rapinoe and even the 99ers before, they're on the same skill level as the women that play. They, in comparison, the men who play for the U.S. the men's national team aren't as skilled as the men around the world. So sure, I think we've had an advantage of the women. I think the world is catching up, but I do think there's a level of teaching that somehow hasn't translated to the men's side for whatever reason. Like Clint Dempsey, I love that. I said that's my favorite player. He played unique to, I think, a lot of the men of his era as far as U.S. men. Like Landon Donovan was a contemporary, but they played a different style. Dempsey had flair. Donovan was part of the culture of, hey, we're try hard. Like, he was certainly a talented guy. What he did on the ball was not in comparison to what Dempsey did. They didn't play the same way. Donovan was efficient with his movements, I guess I'd say. Mm. Dempsey is a guy who was doing tricks in the park to figure out the best way to be effective.
Oh, soccer tricks.
Not yes. Let's be clear.
Get it. He had to come up from
Nagadosh.
Get it from the mud.
Yeah, he had to get it
from the neck.
But not that. It wasn't okay. That muddy. Is what I'll say. It wasn't okay. That muddy.
Yeah, it seems like, just as, you know, a casual soccer fan, that the U.S. women's team was ahead of the development curve of the rest of the world, just investment-wise and just actually how they taught the game to girls. And they're way behind on the men's.
Yeah, and it's funny considering the biggest issue the U.S. women have had is money being given to them. Now, what's put into the program is one thing, but as far as...
that's what I meant.
I know what you're saying, but that's why I thought it was funny. Yes, the investment
In
the program, but as far as investing in the actual players by giving them what you might call equal pay, has been a fight that they're trying to win, and they've made strides there. I can't really explain why we haven't been able to develop in a way. Yes, it's not our favorite sport. It's not our favorite pastime. There's enough people here in America. We dwarf most of the countries.
I was going to say.
Most of the countries are great in soccer. We kind of dwarf their populations.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the countries bigger than the U.S. population-wise are also not great at soccer.
Yeah.
You know, India, China, like, they're not crazy good. Russia, even. Like, they're probably better than the U.S., but
they had a
not
run
by much.
They had the Euros were in their country at one point, or maybe it was the World Cup.
They had a World Cup.
They had a World Cup, so they had a run in the World Cup. But overall, like you said, most of the countries who are the best at the sport, they don't have our population size.
Yeah, so it comes down to it's more like grassroots kind of problems and stuff like that.
Yeah, as far as
they've been the same problems for 20 years.
Yes, they have never really fixed their problems because the system, I guess, hasn't incentivized them doing that.
Yeah, because I think it can be boiled down to they've had a manager, Bob Bradley, and a player, Michael Bradley. They've had a coach, Greg Berhalter, and now they have a player, Sebastian. Like, that just is not strictly nepotism, but is the reason that the U.S. team – but it's the fact that there's so many, like –
connections.
Like, it's like a family business, basically, of, like, Gio Reyna, Claudio Reyna.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of names keep popping back.
Now, it's great that Claudio who was a U.S. star, has a son who's – no, he's got a level of skill that's enticing, but he just hasn't lived up to the potential. Injuries have played a part in Gio's career so far. But yeah, I don't know that Lamine Yamal has a dad managing Spain. Actually, I do know he doesn't. Lamine Yamal does not have a dad managing Spain. Messi didn't have a dad managing Argentina.
Yeah,
I don't know. It is funny around, like, there are like Timothy Weah is the son of a great soccer player.
Yeah,
but
not a U.S.
But George Weah is not currently in the infrastructure of U.S. soccer.
Is he still president of I forgot what.
Yeah, I know the story you're talking about. He may be. I don't know exactly
is
where.
Liberia or something?
Liberia. Yeah, he is.
Look at me. I know the president of Liberia.
George Weah is a Liberian politician. Yes. You know what didn't happen? He didn't say, "Hey, you're going to play." He didn't tell his kid or force his kid to play for Liberia. So. Why is it Sebastian Berhalter? Is that kid's name?
Yeah. I think he had
the assist.
Last night. Yeah.
He has assists to Chris Richards, so he did help get them a win. But yeah, the world's powers don't have a lot of father-son duos where one is running or helping run the federation in some way, shape, or form.
I think it's a symptom of a deeper
and the other
problem.
Is playing. Yeah, daddy ball on the highest levels in some ways.
Can one of these guys be like? At least Shedeur Sanders, like, feels like they're all Bronny James, you know?
Well, we'll see who Shedeur Sanders is on the pro level.
That's true.
Yeah, we don't know what he is.
He was a good college player.
Yeah, we have no idea. Keith, we'll get to you. You got an NFL question. We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to get in? 713-780-3776. I didn't think of it that way. All the connections between fathers and sons. Oh, by the way, Greg Berhalter had a brother that was inside the U.S. Soccer Federation
as
well.
I forgot about that,
too. Yeah. But sure, and Alexi Lalas thinks we're too exclusive. Are we? We seem to have a lot of inclusive things going on. As you said, it may not be nepotism, but from the outside looking in, it feels like nepotism.
Yeah, it's a tight circle that we're picking from.
Yeah, yep. And the Gold Cup, going well so far as the results. We'll see if the U.S. can restore some pride in the badge, as they say. As they used it, like their B team to try to win a Gold Cup, while Mexico has guys who play in the Premier League and other places, so they're treating it a little bit more seriously than we are, which may be a problem as well. All right, Keith, we'll get to you when we come back.
Loaded and ready to rule.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.